It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Shri Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Shri and Peter.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the CPG Guys podcast. This is Shri, one of the CPG Guys. Media, D2C, and supply chain is what I love every single day in e-commerce. And I'd love to remind all our audience that you can find all our content on cpgguys.com, where you can find everything from our podcast to the work we did on the profitability series last year in October, to the one question, one answer series on Instagram, and of course, a link to rate our podcast. How about that, Peter?
Ratings.com/CPGguys,
Apple Podcasts, or you could simply go to Apple Podcasts, find the CPG Guys, and I think Peter likes to see 5 stars. It has something to do with what he learned.
Surprise.
5 stars are good. And our guest host has said surprise today. And I'd also like to remind the audience that we have a new one question, one answer series on Instagram, which will launch in March 2021 with a special guest to be named. And we are in the process of recording it now. And every Monday prior to the episode, including this one, you should have heard the Fresh four newsworthy articles in e-com, CPG, retail, in-store, omnichannel, everything else in between that Peter and I carefully handpicked. That's on its way, and well on its way, if I may say so, since December 21st of last year. And now I'd like to welcome the other CPG guy, the consumer centricity fella, the captain of insights, the guru of loyalty, and Mr. CRM the Bond himself. Hello, Peter.
Sri, you're the sweet to my salty, the fromage to my charcuterie, the monosodium to my glutamate. We go together, and it's just absolutely fantastic. And before we get to our guests, I just want to say, I know you and I have talked about this over the last couple of days. We are so incredibly humbled and flattered by the audience members that have shared feedback with us, that have reached out to ask additional questions, to just have a conversation. Sri and I try to make ourselves available to people who do reach out to us to have these deeper conversations because it one helps us learn and it also helps us shape and educate the industry. So please feel free to continue that outreach. We really love it. Sri, your thoughts?
Monosodium glutamate. Thank God. Ramen noodle or Maggi noodle.
That's what Sri got out of that comment. I like it, Sri. Here's to that.
And of course, Peter and I are not just humble, but we're also extremely grateful.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining this journey of digital transformation, much needed in our CPG industry and retail. And what we do here is to share our knowledge. What you do here as a guest every single week, listeners, is you are also doing your own part to shape the industry the right way. And talking about shaping the industry the right way, our special guest today is none other than the VP of Insights at IdeoClick, ex-Amazonian herself, Miss Andrea Lay. Welcome to the show. And if you can take a second to tell the audience what you do for IdeoClick and who is IdeoClick and where they can be found.
Thanks for having me, you guys. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited for the conversation. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. I'm the VP of Strategy and one of the owners of IdeoClick. My husband and Tom Furvey started this company about 12 or 13 years ago now. And we are a combination of services and software. And we're a full service Amazon and e-commerce agency. So we work across primarily Amazon, also Walmart, Instacart, and Target. We run advertising. We have a software stack for that. And everything from in-stock management to item setup to content writing.
Content. Ooh, I like that.
We are soup to nuts services and software agency. And our main focus is starting with the customer and looking at share of search and customer search groups. And so we have some proprietary reporting and software and strategy around really identifying that customer that you're trying to address and building a search strategy around that.
Married to the CEO. Does HR know about this, Andrea?
People always ask me, what's it like to work with your husband? And I don't know anything different. I mean, we went to business school together and we've always been in the same industry. We worked at Amazon together. So this is totally my normal.
listen, you know, if it works for Facebook, you know, it can work for you.
Besides being a co-owner at
IDEO. You're working at Microsoft too, as I recall.
Andrea is also a mom of three.
I'm a mom of three. I have 10-year-old twins and a 12-year-old. And I would consider myself an e-commerce enthusiast after spending 10 years at Amazon and now nearly five at our agency. You know, I live, speak, breathe, dream e-commerce. It's all I think about. And particularly Amazon, because they're the biggest game in town right now. I spent 10 years there in their retail division. I worked across about 15 different product categories in my time there. And I was a category leader for a number of them and worked on some things like their price matching software in kind of the earlier days, as well as the CRAP program, automated vendor negotiations, lots of things that probably your listeners sort of hate about Amazon. I'm behind them, unfortunately for them. But you can follow me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. And I do a lot of writing and posting and speaking on e-commerce.
You know, my wife had to talk me out of naming our daughter Roaz.
Right.
I'd personally go with ROI or CPM.
Definitely not crap.
That is not
definitely not.
That's it.
Oh, that's how this is how the episode is going to roll, people. We're going to be having some fun.
We've got the potty jokes right up front.
Oh, bring them out. Bring them on.
Your journey started as a Nittany Lion.
My journey, Penn State. Yeah, that was grad school. So my journey, I guess you could say, was interrupted by being a Nittany Lion.
Where did you go to undergrad?
University of Minnesota.
Golden Gophers.
Minneapolis, very good. Gophers, lovely.
She knows every single university motto as well as mascot. Don't add because I'm an avid college football fan. And at some point,
do you want me to sing the college medley, Shri, starting with Amherst, Williams, Dartmouth, and so on and so forth? Because I'll do it.
No, we got to talk with Andrea over here.
All right. Fair enough.
So, Golden Gopher, Nittany Lion, cemented in success at Amazon, and now running your own agency, helping brands win on Amazon.
Yeah, our motto is start with Amazon and win the internet.
This journey didn't happen.
I like that.
Take us through the journey of Golden Gophers to mom of three.
Oh, goodness. Well, that's sort of my life story. I don't know if we have time for that today.
Highlights.
I think, you know, being from the Midwest, you have a really kind of unique angle on, well, everywhere, every place has a unique angle on people and you know, what it takes to be successful. I think we're particularly outgoing and friendly and community oriented in the Midwest. And so, you know, obviously I think that's serves me well in our space, right? Like where, you know, just the fact that we're doing this today, we're very much about our community. And it's one of the things I enjoy most about this field is certainly the community and the support, as well as the, you know, the opportunity to just work with and get to hear from such smart people all the time.
Andrea, it's such a pleasure to speak with you today. Longtime follower, first time caller. Sorry, that's a radio joke, but, I know I actually do follow you on LinkedIn, and I noticed you recently released an article named Warning Signs That Your Amazon Business is Off Track. Can you walk us through some of the highlights of that? What prompted you to write it?
Yeah. I mean, over the years, I have amassed like quite a bit of, I guess you could call them sound bites or experiences with manufacturers. I mean, I probably worked with hundreds kind of more personally, but, you know, in aggregate tens of thousands of brands at Amazon. At IdeoClick, we work with about 350 or so consumer brands. And over time, I've just really been unlucky to be exposed to so many of their challenges, right? Like, and I think, you know, the first question we get when a new client comes to work with us is kind of like, what's wrong with my business? And what are your suggestions for how I can improve it? And over time, we've seen a lot of things. And so the article really walks through kind of looking through every functional area of the business. You know, when we're pitching new business to clients, we audit their accounts on Amazon. And we have like sort of a criteria and checklist that we look through to understand if we think that they are successful right now, and then secondly, set up for success. You know, some products and some manufacturers aren't going to do well online due to the nature of the products or whatever it is. And so the article really kind of walks through the different functional areas of the business and looks at whether you know, what we've seen as kind of an example red flag in each one of them. And it's meant to be like a really quick and easy way to see if there's something that's off track for you. Because I think, you know, after we get the question, like, what's wrong with my business and what could I do better? The next question is, how am I compared to your other clients? Like, everyone wants a sense of benchmarking, and everyone wants to compare. And so, so the article, you know, walks through kind of those comparisons, like what, you know, what would be the red flag in each of these? And I think on there, there are probably about 50 different red flags. So take a look, see if any of those apply to your business.
I have to imagine content is definitely a core component of that list, all the different forms of content that appear on a listing page.
Absolutely. I mean, you need to be search engine optimized, of course, but you also need to give the customer some things that you need to tell them what they need to know in order to make a purchase.
Excellent. Thank you.
Andrea, are there one or two that come to top of mind for you when it comes to warning signs?
I think the ones that we see most commonly are not being set up organizationally for success with Amazon and e-commerce. And that's kind of more of a staffing plus cultural dynamic and sometimes skills too. So we see that one the most often. And that's really about, you know, figuring out we get asked a lot too, like, what's the right org structure to support e-commerce? And there's no single answer to that. It kind of depends on where your products are challenged, what the specific challenges are for you in e-commerce. And then obviously that's where you need to have some more resources. So we see that pretty often. And then kind of along those lines, I think the next biggest thing we see is, you know, of course, everyone understands the importance of Amazon as an ad platform. I think it's pretty common knowledge how to be successful from an SEO and content perspective. You can read lots of articles on that. But where organizations still tend to starve Amazon and e-commerce is in their supply chain and in the operations, or at least having like sort of a poor linkage and feedback loop between what's happening on the operations side and what's happening, you know, in the sales and marketing side. And we time and time again see manufacturers who come to us who have they're enormous CPGs. They have huge ad budgets, yet they're only able to fill their purchase orders from Amazon at like a 70% rate, which is well below kind of where you need to be. So, and it's hard. It's really hard to get that right. There's a lot going on there. There are, you know, vendor codes and EDI, and it's a lot of data, but you really need a clean feedback loop to be able to do that effectively. And if you starve, you know, the e-commerce retailers, you're just not on the shelf. It's not like the customer just buys the other one of your products because they see it right next to yours on the shelf. There's probably some entirely different brand next to you on the shelf in e-commerce.
Andrea, before Sri gets to his next question, I want to double click down on something you just said and put you on the burner around this. We've asked this question of other guests. I know this is broadly generalizing it, but do you see that brands where the Amazon ownership is under the marketing organization versus the sales organization is generally more adept at success?
No, I don't see that. I think it depends on the manufacturer and their dynamics. I mean, I worked with a manufacturer, who was a relatively large player on Amazon, and they had no dedicated e-commerce team, and it was all triaged and it was all, you know, matrix kind of teams, and they were doing it really successfully. So then likewise, you can look at some of the industry examples out there like Newell and others that have built enormous e-commerce teams. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be more successful. I think there are some really inherent cultural things that need to be in place that would line up nicely with e-commerce and more specifically Amazon. And if you don't have those, you won't be successful. And I think the biggest one is being willing to take risks. And Amazon's willing to take risks all the time. That's all they do. And risk is encouraged and failure is rewarded. And I don't see that as often with our clients. And I especially don't see it in consumer packaged goods.
Do they have to be big risks, or can you just test, learn, fail fast, and move on?
Well, as Jeff Bezos would say, if you're not investing to a degree that it would be pain, that the loss would be painful, you're not really investing at a degree that would move the needle.
Wow. Quoting the Oracle of Seattle. Brilliant. Brilliant. Nice, Andrea.
So I think that interest in taking risks and accepting failure and learning from it is really what e-commerce, that's what e-commerce thrives on. And we don't see that as often. We're often encouraging clients to take risks and to be bold. But you learn just as much from the failure as you do, maybe even more from the failure than you do from the success. So I think that's like a cultural difference kind of organizationally that's important to have in place. And then the last thing I would say that we kind of biggest red flag is when, and this is my favorite one, I'm the number three water brand in the world, so I should be number three on Amazon. that concept of like thinking you understand who your competitive set is. And it is that those brands on the brick and mortar shelves, certainly, and you are number three. But it is a completely different set of manufacturers on Amazon, guaranteed. I mean, it is, that is always true. And at a minimum, maybe the ranking of the top three are the same, but the ones, you know, after that are a whole different list. Ones you've never heard of, Amazon private label, whatever. And I think that's because, you know, it's a frictionless marketplace to enter. Like, you don't have a buyer making assortment decisions. You don't have to be invited. Like, it's a come as you are party. And that gives a lot of upstart manufacturers an opportunity to really get their business going, and they're not in other channels. So their presence may surprise you. And we have clients that come to us and say, no, you know, I'm a brand new brand. I'm PE backed and I want to get distribution in Costco next year. And no one's ever heard of me. Like, what's my plan? And we have a plan for that. It involves a lot of marketing spend, but you know, those are the brands you're up against. And I think that's a big, I guess you call it a red flag, or maybe just sort of like distorted thinking that what is happening in brick and mortar, like from a competitive environment perspective, is the same as e-commerce, because it's really different.
Andrea, key takeaway from Andrea there. Don't be so arrogant as to think that everything you do on the physical shelf entitles you to that similar performance on the digital shelf. How many times have we talked about this, Sri?
Peter, so Andrea, I've been through a lot of these questions that you speak to. And one of the things that comes to top of mind for me is, you know, we obviously said Amazon ability to fail fast and fail cheap is not the key word. Like, Amazon over the course of time became the antithesis of how most CPG brands were kind of raised, because they also have the backbone of a tech-based platform. And I think it's enough in the news has been written about how Wall Street holds Amazon to a different standard of future promise based on the technology world of Facebook, et cetera, whereas every other CPG brand is held to existing profits and commitments and things of that nature. But listening to you speak, I wanted to ask the simplest question in the room. This e-commerce thing, is it important in a brand's journey in 2021 to the point that it's actually non-negotiable? And is that more if you're a startup, aka digital native, mid-tier brand, you know, a couple billion, 3 billion, or the larger brands, the 8, 10, 15 billion global brand? Where is e-commerce the most important, and is it a must-do?
I think it's non-negotiable. Yes, it's non-negotiable, because that's where the customer is. And you need to be where your customer is. The customer is searching Amazon and they're researching your product, or they're looking at other e-commerce platforms. So you have to be there with your brand in a consistent voice. And, you know, you need to invest in those spaces. Now, the relative importance of the different e-com platforms varies widely, you know, depending on the manufacturer's strategy. Like, we work with some manufacturers who are doing more than half of their e-commerce business on their own D2C site. That's great. Like, if you grew up that way, like, rah, rah to you. That's fantastic. You own your data, you own your customer experience. And we have a number of manufacturers who, you know, for various reasons have ended up in that position where they're doing the lion's share of their e-com on their own D2C site. I would say being on Amazon and the major e-com platforms was non-negotiable last year. I think what's non-negotiable this year is you need to be diversified. Like, you need to have different ways that you can fill orders for customers. And that can be having, you know, a good presence on Amazon as a vendor, but also as a seller or a drop shipper, you know, selling through other marketplaces, a D2C site, you know, engaging in social commerce. But you need to have some diversification this year, because I think we all felt the pain of when we didn't. And manufacturers, particularly large CPGs, I think, Sri, you would probably identify with this, you know, when you've got all your eggs in the Amazon basket, you're pretty beholden to them as it relates to the vendor negotiations. And pretty much every client we talk to says Amazon is the most expensive retailer that they work with.
What I'll share, Andrea, is that's the way it starts, but it's also a lot of misinterpretation in the industry of how to compare apples to apples customer P&Ls, as well as, and do you compare an Amazon P&L to a Walmart P&L or another P&L to get it right? And Peter and I put out a profitability series set of episodes back in October of 2020, where we addressed this very question, right? Can e-commerce be profitable? Is it going to be accretive to creative things? Can you make it neutral? Things of that nature. But to me, Andrea, the single biggest thing that has stood out in the journey is I've had to go through the transformation of having been raised 15 years in a brick and mortar ecosystem and then transitioning later in my career into the digital ecosystem is the training and the skill sets required don't apply directly from brick and mortar into the digital world. They are radically different. For example, some of the causals that drive success on the omnichannel side are very different from the in-store model of lobby displays, end caps, the ability to negotiate warehouse-based truckloads, cubing out your supply chain. Supply chain in the omnichannel world is very transactional in nature, and you have to be able to optimize your transaction versus a very large purchase order. So keeping all that in mind, as you say, it's non-negotiable. What is your one piece of advice for skill set improvement? Where should one focus for skill set improvement?
My one piece of advice for skill set improvement would be strategy. I mean, I think maybe like a sexier answer would be, data and analytics. Most manufacturers we talk to have more data than they know what to do with. I mean, there's so many data providers out there now, and it's a really big and popular space. And obviously being able to understand and work with different data sets is important, but I think it's strategy. I think as you're really thinking now that Walmart's, really, really in the game and, you know, there are other platforms, depending on the category, we have manufacturers who are often doing like maybe half of their e-com business on Amazon and half on Chewy or Ulta and Sephora or, you know, whatever the category is. There's a player that's getting big. And so I think having that ability to drive a strategy across marketplaces is critical. And I've seen so many times what happens when there is no strategy and you're kind of shooting from the hip and you end up with pricing compression and, you know, brand equity loss and an inconsistent customer experience across marketplaces. And so I think also really challenging vendor negotiations with each of the retailers. So I think it's strategy.
Yeah, I think most got into e-com because it was exciting and there was a lot of buzz around Amazon, not a lot of strategic thinking, but I have a lot of hope that is evolving into strategic thinking now.
Yeah, I think like earlier, maybe a few years ago, people who got into e-commerce or who were good at it were really good with data because you were suddenly, you know, faced with a lot of it. And if you could manipulate it quickly and make decisions quickly based on it, you could be successful. And I think that's still true to some degree, but the game has changed and it's a way more strategic play than it is a data play now.
Andrea, my favorite opportunity on this podcast is when I get to steal from Sri questions that relate to his favorite topic, which is retail media. Yeah, Sri, I'm doing that. I'm owning this. First, a comment. You mentioned the fact that a lot of your clients say that Amazon is the most expensive form of media and retail media that they experience. That's true. But if we talked in January with Rob Gonzalez of Salsify, he talks about how some of his clients, one client in particular, was able to actually measure the amount of volume that was impacted in physical CVS stores when Amazon advertising was on or off. That's really powerful. It may be most expensive, but it's also one of the biggest drivers of overall commerce in the industry. So here's my question. Amazon Media Group, your ability to succeed on Amazon is very much driven by your investment in AMG. Is that fact or fiction? And if you're going to invest in Amazon Media, when is, or rather how is ROI measured? Is it about growth or is it about actual performance?
I do think Amazon is pay to play for sure. So it is no longer possible to be wildly successful on the platform without a media investment. I think 5 years ago I would have had a different answer, but the structure of the platform has changed. The inventory, the real estate on the site is changing, and it's a really competitive market now. But I want to circle back to something you said before about Amazon being really expensive for manufacturers. And I think what I hear from manufacturers is it's because of the trade funding, not necessarily thinking of it as a media platform.
Ah.
It's trade and crap and all of the, and SVS. And
Andrea, what does crap stand for? We're a family podcast here.
Can't realize a profit. It's Amazon's term for products that don't make money for them. And they have,
I know, Sri, you're bringing on all these foul mouthed people. We need to clarify this. Sorry. Go ahead, Andrea.
So that's their term for when they can't make a profit, and they measure profit on an item level, unlike a brick and mortar retailer. So manufacturers that we work with talk about Amazon being a really expensive channel, but it's not necessarily because of the media spend. It's the trade funding, the crap allowances, the vendor services programs that you need to invest in, the pressure that they put on you from a negotiations standpoint, put on manufacturers from a negotiation standpoint to help them fund their free shipping. And I think the
free
media
shipping.
Yeah, free. I wrote an article about that. Guess who's paying for free shipping?
Yeah, we know.
So I think the media platform is definitely necessary, and it is pay to play. And I think whether you want to be focused on media as a growth driver or an efficiency play entirely depends on your strategy. And you know, if you're out there really trying to drive awareness for your brand, your strategy is going to look a lot different than if you're already a market leader and you're defending your space. And so there isn't really like a right answer to that question. I think I think there's probably like 3 to 5 kind of categories that our clients fall into. And we have a program that each one of that we put them in, that really, you know,
that is a 12-step program. No.
No, okay, sometimes working with Amazon does feel a little bit like that, but it's really based on their leadership position, their natural relevance to some of the keywords and what they're trying to accomplish. And also even within their brands, like the strategy for a lesser known brand that they're trying to really get off the ground might be different than the strategy for a market leader.
Fair enough. So let's switch from advertising, Amazon, EMG, and the world of Walmart to IdeoClick. Can you give us some details around the different services IdeoClick provides and why somebody would go to IdeoClick versus another agency or service provider?
Yeah. Well, I think what sets us apart is that we are a combination of software and services. And I think there are a lot of providers out there that are, you know, all kind of more soft skills and or all data providers. But as I mentioned earlier, you know, I think most manufacturers have access to more data than they know what to do with. And I don't even necessarily think in those cases, like layering on more data is even useful to them. So I think what sets us apart is that we're sort of a hybrid of those two. We work with the manufacturer to really help them develop a cohesive cross retailer strategy. And then we actually execute it. And we can do that through our software stack and through some unique things that we have, such as our share of search, reporting and tools. And then I think the other things that set us apart are we are kind of the, a lot of us are the original builders of these categories on Amazon. And so the expertise that we bring to the table is pretty deep and pretty broad. So that expertise is strong. And we invest significantly and I'm actually responsible for upskilling in the organization. So, you know, we have training programs that our folks go through, and we have lots of different mechanisms that we're sharing information, you know, to help understand and publish best practices, and they're changing all the time. So the expertise is a second thing that sets us apart. And then lastly, we're comprehensive, and we got that way organically. You know, we started off as a, advertising provider and a, you know, an FBA kind of agency. And we realized you can't really run advertising effectively if you can't also control if the product is in stock. And you can do a much more efficient job on the advertising if the item already has good SEO. And so we sort of organically got into all of these different services because we realized that clients really need them and that you can drive more effectiveness for clients if you are able to touch all the parts of the business. And so we do everything from, now we do everything from advertising to cost recovery. We have a pretty big cost recovery business. We go get back those chargebacks and shortages.
Chargebacks. I love chargebacks.
Did that give you a little PTSD, that term, Sri?
More like goosebumps. I actually like to open up the numbers and decompose them and actually claw back the chargebacks.
Yeah, it's really satisfying. And we focus on root cause. So we want to go figure out why it's happening. It's usually, you know, something catalog or setup or shipping related. But those would be the things that set us apart. And we work across all product categories. We've got clients in consumables and electronics and fashion, sporting goods. We're all over the place. And we work with most of the largest CPGs.
I'd be shortchanging this conversation if I didn't ask you. So the hottest new tool in the ecosystem these days is actually not Amazon, because Amazon has been around a decade. And I think every CPG manufacturer now knows the road to retail success, just like many other large retailers, also passes through Amazon. But the hottest toy in the shop is click and collect. What is IdeoClick's connection?
IdeoClick is part of our larger company, which is Consumer Equity Partners. We had BevyUp. It was a customer connection and software sharing tool that we sold to Nordstrom a few years ago. And we have IdeoClick and we have Replenium. And Replenium is our click and collect business. So our kind of the thinking behind Consumer Equity Partners is help manufacturers win on Amazon and also help them build counter strategies to working with Amazon. And a big counter strategy right now is click and collect. And so our specific software within Replenium is focused on subscription software. So kind of like the brick and mortar retailers version of subscribe and save.
And Andrea, you just made me the perfect segue. First and foremost, I'll just mention that Sri and I would love to have Replenium talk to us on this podcast. Tom, call me. But let's get to that in a second. But before I get to my replenishment question, I heard you mention retailers as in the plural form. Are you telling me that you support your brand clients not just on Amazon, but on other retail platforms?
Yeah, from a strategy perspective, we work across all of the platforms. From an advertising perspective, we are currently advertising across Amazon, Walmart, Target, and Instacart. And then from a managed services perspective, we're just getting into obviously Amazon, and then we're just starting to get into Walmart. And by the end of Q1, I think we're meant to have all of, you know, have that live as kind of an offering. And again, it's really organic. How we got there, the clients wanted it. You know, they're starting to ask about other platforms and
your client responsive. What a novel concept.
We try.
That's great. Let me get to the harder question.
Amazon,
I know. Let's talk about replenishment, because that's something that Sri and I have talked about. So subscribe and save, as they call it on Amazon. Are you seeing data that showing that this is a major driver of success, measurably speaking? And to that point, do you think that brands in particular should think about this as more of a below the line marketing investment rather than an above the line trade investment, because it is about building brand loyalty?
That's a really interesting question. Well, first, I think there's a difference between subscriptions and replenishment. And so And subscriptions are, I send you something on a regular interval that's fixed. And replenishment is replenishing you when you're out. And I think those things look really different from a technology perspective. And that's something that we're addressing with, you know, that's our approach with Replenium, is that it needs to be a more flexible system. If you know, I think a lot of us got on the subscribe and save bandwagon years ago with Amazon, and you realize like you end up with way too much of something and not enough of something else. And that's not a replenishment system, that's the subscription system. So far as it relates to subscribe and save on Amazon specifically, you know, certain categories do really well with subscriptions, and for some of those categories, the subscriptions are often more than half of the business for Amazon. And those would be like coffee, and you know, that's a great example. And, you know, there's some snack foods and things like that, and some of the OTC stuff. But I think in terms of the subscription, you know, the value of it, you know, you're getting a customer an annuity. And you know, what we know about Amazon Subscribe and Save program is that the cancellation rates are pretty low. Mainly because they don't offer, the discount is not super high. I mean, you can run promotions and do some things to manage that, but it's not lucrative enough for you to just like subscribe to get the discount and then cancel. So, you know, for some of our clients, they're doing a lot of their business through subscriptions, and that's great because you don't have to market and acquire that customer each time. The subscriptions are on Amazon are a win-win for manufacturer and Amazon. The manufacturer doesn't have to continue to remarket to those customers, obviously, because it's just the shipments just keep going out. It lowers Amazon's cost structure significantly because they don't have to like one day prime it to you. They can put it on, they know like weeks in advance when you're supposed to get it, and they can put it on the slowest boat possible to get it to your door. They can, you know, load balance, they can do all intra warehouse transfers before that last mile to really lower all of their costs. And their software is really good at, their supply chain software is absolutely amazing. So, you know, it's a win-win because it lowers Amazon's cost structure. It, you know, reduces the crap conversations and margin conversations between manufacturer and Amazon. And then it also provides the manufacturer with a steady stream of orders that didn't come from marketing. So I think it's an amazing business. I think it's just unfortunate that it doesn't fit well for a lot of product categories.
Well, Andrea, I can just say in my case that my Norwegian account Tova practically forced me into subscribe and save on too many occasions where I ran out of inventory of her favorite dog food. So it's a staple of my family.
That said, I have a very important question.
I think I just made Sri shake his head. He was just like, seriously, you're talking about your dog food?
Diapers and dog food. That's what Peter's life is about these days.
Diapers and dog food, my friend. Diapers and dog food.
Visit to his favorite retail store, which also happens to be in Jersey. So that said, that's and Connecticut. So that said, Andrea, let's jump to D2C for a second. If I'm a brand and I'm already thinking about getting my business started on Amazon, or I'm well on my way and I'm hearing the word D2C, and it almost feels like in the industry there's peer pressure to get into D2C these days. Amazon is already acting as your pseudo D2C, even in a 1P business model. Would you get into D2C? What would be the differentiating factors? And if you're well on your way to a successful D2C business, would you necessarily activate on Amazon? And is there a difference between 1P, 3P, and D2C?
I think if you already have a really successful D2C business, you certainly can still activate on Amazon. I just might not become a vendor. I would probably be a third-party seller. And the main reason being, you know, you want to, you've now had control over the business and the brand building and the pricing structure for your products for a long time. And you definitely don't want to give all of that up, and potentially erode the brand experience and erode the brand value. But you do want access to all those customers that Amazon has. D2C is super sexy right now. I'm actually working on e-commerce trends and predictions, and more specifically some supply chain and logistics trends and predictions deck right now. And D2C is like all over the news media as a prediction for this year. And, and is a really hot topic and trend. And I think it does make sense for some manufacturers to get into it, and it provides a lot of benefits. You know, the main one being it can be a great sandbox for you to really test out new products and to get some early feedback and before you even take them to the retailers. So you can say, hey, well, I at least have a success indicator, which is that this one did better on my site than these other ones. You know, it also gives you a lot of rich data about conversion rates and traffic patterns. And, you know, you can own your own customer review platform if you want to. So you get a lot of data points, and you also get a direct connection with the customer, which is really valuable versus having it go through an intermediary, because you can market to them and ask them for reviews and things that Amazon won't let you do. That being said, it's an enormous undertaking. You know, this was IdeoClick's original business model circa, like, I don't even know what year, 2006, we built manufacturer websites. And that was a really long time ago. And, you know, it's no small feat. And if you can either build it yourself or you can use all these different, you know, providers. And once you do all of that, obviously the cost structure is pretty high. So it's not for everyone. I think if you've already got one, like, continue to invest in it and continue to make it a channel for you and leverage what you can get out of it from a data and customer connection perspective. If you don't already have one, you know, I don't know if you should set one up. It would kind of depend on what else you got going on this year as it relates to, you know, what your other priorities are and all of that. But I do think there are some real benefits to it. And even just getting, even if it's not and it doesn't become an enormous channel, it can be leveraged for experiments and learnings in a way that you can't leverage the retailers.
I'll agree with you, Andrea, that D2C can be challenging for a lot of brands. I came from the food and beverage CPG space. And when I think perishables, that becomes a real challenge if you think you can fulfill frozen refrigerated items in an efficient and cost-effective way. But in any event, got to talk COVID. It is obviously omnipresent in our lives still. It has clearly cemented Amazon as a priority for every brand. Conversely, though, Amazon's supply chain weaknesses were highlighted under the demand stress. Amazon, though, was a household name before it. It's going to continue to be an important part of every brand's existence. From your perspective, what are the DNA of success at Amazon? What drives it? Is ultimately, in the long run, is it a winning platform for big national brands?
Well, yes, I think it can be a winning platform. But I think what's really the most interesting thing about Amazon and why they're going to prevail is that they are a dynamic platform. So what they are today is not what they were 5 years ago, is not what they're going to be in 5 years. So no one really knows what Amazon's going to be in 5 years. But I think I have seen some signals that are shifting, that are telling us that they are shifting more from being a search-based platform to being a browse-based experience. And I'm seeing that through some of their, you know, some of their forays into the post program, which is getting bigger and bigger, you know, their foray into like some of the live streaming and influencers. And they're really trying to get on the bandwagon a bit too late, but still getting on the bandwagon of some of that, and certainly ahead of the other e-commerce players. So I absolutely think that there's still going to be a really important channel for manufacturers. I do think some of these category-specific players are gaining a lot of traction.
Yeah.
And when you start looking at category by category, Amazon may not be the biggest game in town anymore. And I was just looking at something that showed mobile app shopping app downloads. I don't remember where it was on LinkedIn. Yep. And it showed the count of shopping app downloads in Walmart's right there under Amazon. Now, granted, Amazon probably has an enormous install base already, but just for last year, Wayfair was on there, Wish, you know, a number of other retailers, you know, that are really starting to take hold in their specific categories. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it by doing something that's differentiated from Amazon. And even Target, for that matter, is differentiated from Amazon. You know, they're about assortment. They're about on-trend merchandise. You know, you're going to like everything you see when you go in there. It's a different.
Yeah, they have a very radically different marketplace approach than Walmart and Amazon. It's invitation only. Yep. Only one one marketplace provider per brand. They don't offer you the multiple options. It's a very different kind of approach.
Yeah, because they're protecting what they know that they're good at and what they know their distinct competitive advantages, which is their assortment planning. So absolutely, Amazon's going to continue to prevail and be an important part of a manufacturer's strategy. But I think we would encourage manufacturers to build other strategies as well.
This episode will be incomplete without me asking you this final question, which is, if there was one piece of advice you'd give brands on their Amazon journey, what would it be? Given where we are today.
Other than hire IdeoClick, but you could say that too if you want.
One piece of advice on their Amazon journey. I think it would be kind of what we talked about before. Be willing to take risks.
Yeah.
And be willing to fail. You know, you can manage your failures and your risks in such a way that they're not super customer facing. But you know, you're not going to be able to grow as an organization and as a brand in e-commerce if you're not willing to find some opportunities to take risks and learn and potentially fail.
Failure is one step closer to success. There you have it. Wisdom from the CPG guys.
So I want to remind our audience that you can find all our content at cpgguys.com. Do tell us what you think about what we do for you here, which is bring guests from the industry and try to give back to the industry that both Peter and I have been raised in the CPG industry in meaningful ways. And the easiest way to do that, you can go to the Apple Podcast platform, ratethispodcast.com/cpgguys. And tell us what's on your mind, what content you like. Andrea, Peter and I cannot thank you enough for coming here and sharing your wisdom. But before we close the episode, if people want to find you and IdeoClick, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, you can visit our website, IdeoClick.com. You can follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter, Andrea Kalay. I post and write and speak very frequently about e-commerce. And I would love to connect with you.
Thank you, Andrea. Peter, as always, it's been a pleasure doing this episode with you.
Sri, as I told you, I've been a longtime follower of Andrea. I would echo what she just recommended. You should follow her on LinkedIn. You will become very savvy in the industry very quickly if you see the content that she is posting. This is a fanboy opportunity for me, Andrea. So thank you. And don't forget, call Tom. Tom, we want you.
I'm sure he'd love to.
That would be great. But Sri, this is just great. I love these kind of conversations because it's right up our alley. It's with people we love to talk about who are thoughtful. Thank you so much, Andrea. I really enjoyed this, Sri.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Andrea. And I will close this episode out by stating Andrea's latest post, which is, this is what disruption looks like in the book industry. Thank you, folks, and see you again next week.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.